a place in the World Cup. For us. He yeah! scored! Australia have done it!
Hello and welcome to Adam and Archie. I'm Adam Peacock, bringing Archie Thompson in a moment. Big welcome if you're watching on KO Sports, and a big welcome if you're listening on the Fox Football podcast. Over the next half an hour, we're going to rip through some big topics in Australian football and elsewhere, and a few old stories from my good mate Archie Thompson, who is in stage four at the moment down there in Melbourne. Arch, first of all okay, mate? How are you coping?
Yeah, it obviously is a little bit tougher when more restrictions come in. I think we're only allowed out an hour each day, which is tough. But look, we're all sort of doing it together. Everyone seems to be following the rules, which is good. And then hopefully we can get out of this quicker than the 6 weeks that we have in place.
Yeah, the one positive is we've got some good sport to watch each and every night on Fox Sports, including all the A-League football. We're in the midst of 11 games in 11 days. Now, since we last spoke to you, there's been a game a night, so there's a bit to choose from with this question, but what's popped out at you? I'm guessing that maybe something that a young Dylan Ruiz-Diaz did, even though it was against Victory for Central Coast Mariners.
Yeah, look, I was quite torn when this happened. I mean, Melbourne Victory were good. I think Central Coast were just that little bit better and probably deserved the win. And Diaz, what a wonderful couple of finishes off the bench. I mean, he's had a bit of game time over the last few weeks. And this is a period that I've really enjoyed too, because we get to see a lot of the young talent coming through, the fringe players that mightn't have got the opportunity because of the situation we're in. But wonderful finish. And with some of the young talent coming through, obviously, you want to give them encouragement. You want to keep their feet on the ground. So after that match, I actually text young Diaz via Instagram, as you do these days. And I said, mate, well done, quality finishes. But, you know, keep your head down, work hard, because this is just the start. And exciting time for Australian football when you look at the talent across the A-League that we're seeing.
Did he get back to you?
He did, funny enough. He actually said, oh, thanks very much, legend. I did have to throw that legend part in. It was there. But look, it's just great. I mean, like I said, kids are getting their opportunity and they're taking it. But like I said, this is just a start for these young players. And, you know, just keep your feet down on the ground and head down, and anything's possible.
That's the joy of Instagram, isn't it? Because if you sent him a text message, he wouldn't have had your number and he might have gone, thanks, who's this? The big custard pie back to you. So, yeah, it's the beauty of Insta.
Yeah, look, I'm using it for good, not evil these days. So, it's just good to see some of these young talent coming through. And like I said, I hope for these guys bigger and better things.
You said it, you're using it for good, not evil. I don't believe you, but you said it. So, yeah, we'll hold you to that, mate. We'll hold you to that. Hey, what jumped out for me, I was actually lucky enough to be at Newcastle last Sunday. And I say lucky enough because it was a great game. Really enjoyed Newcastle and Western United. But the collisions and the gamesmanship and the tenacity and just the head-to-head battle between Nigel Bogart and Bessart Berisha. And I know we sit here and we think, oh, we want to see beautiful football. And I love finishes like the one that the Mariners and Victory served up and good football like that. But sometimes it is just a head-on sport. And that collision, I'm sure you would have heard it through the television. Like Bogart went into Bessart and like air came out of every orifice, every one of Bessart. It was just extraordinary sound.
Yeah, well, look, it's incredible. And, you know, when you have such fiery characters, I mean, I've played it a number of times against Nigel Bogart. I know he's a tough competitor. And Bessart Berisha is too. But I know that if you're in his face and you work him over and over, sometimes that brings that sort of toughness out of Bessart Berisha, which could go either way. But that's the sort of beauty of when you have a great tussle between a defender and a striker. I mean, it's almost like the butterfly effect when you think of that challenge, like when a butterfly flaps his wing on one end, there's a tornado at the other side of the world. I hate to know what was happening after that collision halfway, because I was like, ooh, that's got to hurt.
Yeah, exactly. Was there a defender in your time that you went, oh, no, not him. He's going to rake the back of my legs. He's going to, like, damage my lungs. He's going to do things to me that I don't want done to me.
Well, look, what I have to say, probably Sash Ozanowski. He was always a tough competitor, always someone that was always in your ear. And, you know, also too with Socceroo camp. So, I mean, he's just one of those defenders that just likes to get in there and, doesn't matter if you're on his side or not. It's like he just wants to win that ball, and I think that's the sort of mentality most defenders have. And I have to say, probably Kevin Muscat, I'm so lucky to obviously be on his side and not on the other side of the park, because he was one tough defender I'd hate to come up against.
Yeah, Sasha's an interesting one. He's now, like, he's still involved in football, I'm pretty sure, down there in Victoria, but he actually, his business is training up security dogs, like sniffer dogs. And could you imagine what his mentality that he's trying to pass on to these dogs? You just wouldn't mess with these canines, surely.
Oh, it'd be scary, and it'd be pretty much him demonstrating exactly the sort of method he wants from these dogs. So, I mean, like, if he obviously saw an intruder and he was teaching a dog, I'm sure that he'd be nipping at that intruder's leg as much as those animals were. And it's strange that he's gone into that side of business. I know that he's actually doing really, really well. I think he even had a couple of dogs working out of the Allianz Stadium there, which at one time. So, I mean, he was a defender, obviously, going into security, which just slots in perfect with his mentality.
Yeah, you wouldn't want to break into his house. You get past the dogs and you've got to put up with Sash. And then you somehow got to get out of there. It's not happening. It's the end. The end. Full stop. Good night. Yeah, fade to black. Just one thing on Sash as well. He did tell me once that he was offering the FFA. We were having all these trouble with the flares. He said to the FFA, I'll train these dogs. It's easy to do. You just got to give me a bit of time to do it, to find any flair, any place, any time. So I don't know if they took him up on that offer, but yeah, I mean, I guess the pandemic's take care of the flares, because there's no crowds for flares at the moment.
Yeah, so. Well, 100%, 100%.
Anyway, another thing that I caught my eye, and I'd like your take on it as well, Adelaide United. Now, obviously not your favourite football club, given who you represented mainly in the A-League, but you do appreciate surely what Carl Viet has been able to draw out of these kids. In these couple of games, I'm just taken by them, how good they are at the moment and how maybe good they can be.
Well, yeah, that's what I love about, again, this period, is managers giving kids the opportunity. And with Carl Viet, I think there was so much turmoil at that club before the shutdown. And that had to do with pretty much with the manager, butting heads with a lot of the players. And I'll tell you what, from a ex-player's point of view, your manager should be giving confidence and not obviously showing in the press or to fans his dislike with maybe whatever players are doing. It's I feel like the job of a manager is to take a lot of that pressure off the players. So if the team isn't doing so well, well, maybe I didn't set the team up properly. Maybe the formation wasn't right. I felt like with whatever was happening, players need to take some responsibility. But I feel like from a manager's point of view, they should be shouldering it. And I felt like with the old manager, it was a lot of pointing at players, and he was making it public. I feel like with Carl, Beard obviously played against him. I know he's a competitor, but he's someone that breeds confidence. And you can already tell it's a happy environment. And I know with any work environment, if it's good, then the performance is going to be great. And I know that obviously having Bruce GT at the helm too certainly helps. And I want huge success for this club because and their players, because they deserve it. They've got some quality there, and they're starting to believe. And I'm just hoping that they're not running out of games, because there are a lot of other teams, West United, that are obviously on the footsteps of that six, who have a lot more games in hand. But look, it's exciting to see these players. I've always believed that they could do well because the quality that they have. It's just about belief and confidence, which Carl gives.
Yeah, I caught up with him on a special edition of the Fox Football Podcast last week, and I asked him, what do you give these kids when you're developing them? Because he's known players like Lachlan Brooks since he was 12. He's known the Touareg since they were a little bit less tall and developed than they are now, which is not much because they were probably man children when they were 12 themselves. But you know what I mean? He knows what these kids are. He knows their personalities. And I asked him, what's the main specific thing you give these kids when they're developing? And they're going to make mistakes, as they all do, and especially now as well when they make the big grades. But he goes, freedom. That's the main thing. He says, freedom. They all have their traits. They all have their qualities. Just give them the freedom to be able to get the most out of those qualities. That's, I'm thinking that's music to someone like your ears.
Well, definitely. And I think with my time with Ernie Merrick, he pretty much said, look, Archie, as soon as you get into that front third, just let your ability shine through and just give you the freedom. And from a strikers and players' point of view, that's brilliant. I mean, if you've got a structure that you obviously work off, which is fine because you need that discipline of it, but I think if you coach a player's skills and what his qualities are out of him, you're not going to see the best of it. I feel like you're seeing with Obsef at the moment, the style of football and maybe not that confidence he found from his old manager that was there, he wasn't able to express how he plays. And I feel like now he's in a position now that it suits him. He's scoring goals. He's more active in play because at the early stages of the season, he was more of a mannequin than an actual player. And now we're getting to see the best of him, and it's purely down to the manager believing in the qualities and giving that player the freedom, which is fantastic.
Hey, off the park, and I know we don't want to we want to steer clear as much as off the park stuff, because the on the park stuff at the moment is really good in the A League, but it has to be touched on. The Mariners are up for sale. So Mike Charlesworth has just gone, I'm out, folded. He's had a pair of twos for a while, so he's decided to finally fold them in. So it's up for sale, but he hasn't handed the license in, I understand. He's heard that there's been multiple parties put forward expressions of interest. Now, it's got to get from expression of interest to having a look at the books to actually then putting an offer in, and that could take between 4 and 6 weeks. However, it's good news is that there are interested parties, despite the fact of what's happening in the economy all around the world. Arch, it's a good thing for the Mariners, perhaps, that they can reset. I look at it as a positive rather than a negative at the moment, because it just wasn't working under this guy. But have you got any stories of when you've had owners get involved in football, good and bad, like get involved in the day-to-day running of a football club, or as players you sit there and go, what on earth is this chump doing?
Yeah, well, look, I feel, obviously with Charles leaving, that's great for the club, great for football in that area, because, like, just hearing some of the stories come out of there, like, you want to have a professional environment, but, you know, I'm playing MPL3, and we've probably got more than what the Central Coast have had to deal with, like in terms of physios, masseuses, just having that, I suppose, opportunity to succeed, which they never really had. Yeah, yeah, professionalism, which they never really had since he's taken over. And that team, I remember when they were, you know, at the height of their powers, was such an intimidating place to go. And now it almost seems like, okay, teams go there and it's like, okay, easy 3 points, let's do it. And you want to build a culture, and it had such a great, I mean, it's not saying that there's a great culture within the playing group, but it stems from the club. And when you feel like from a player's point of view that you're not getting that belief or even that money to kind of succeed, it's difficult to put those performances on a pitch. And I know that it's such a great region for football. There's so many great young talented players there. It just needs the right backing behind it.
Mike Charlesworth tried to take over the management rights of Central Coast Stadium, but it was protected by the Central Coast Council, who managed the stadium at the moment, and they didn't want, it sounded like that they just wanted to protect that for themselves rather than what's going to be beneficial for the actual facility and also the region as well. And the Mariners are pretty much the only tenants there, but they couldn't get that done. The club is attractive because it's got an academy and a pretty good one as well. They hub themselves around everything local up there. The club's the club. There's a training ground, and also there's a commercial property attached to the club as well, that they have a medical facility in that they outsource, and the club offices are there. So it is not as unattractive as you might think for a club that's won 4 of the last 5 wooden spoons. But just back to ownership, have you ever been involved in the club where you've gone, what is this guy doing? Like, what on earth is going on here? Because the owner seems like he's on another planet.
Yeah, well, funny enough, in Belgium, when our club was going through some tough times and obviously players weren't getting paid for a long time, there was an opportunity for the club owner to sell it off to a Chinese syndicate. But this Chinese syndicate was mafia, and so that kind of went down the went down the gurgle. But look, it's obviously hard from each end of the scale when you look at running a football club. You know, the only real clubs that are probably making a profit are those are ones that are obviously you know, overseas, Real Madrid and all these types of clubs. So it is difficult. You've got to have someone that's really passionate about the game. Obviously got a little bit of money, but doesn't mind losing a bit of money. But I feel like, again, with Charles leaving, this is an opportunity for someone to come in and take over what has the potential to be something special like it was. And I know that they can bring back the glory days.
Did you nearly go to the Mariners once?
Funny enough, I was had obviously stopped my time at Melbourne Victory, and I've probably been a couple of months out of the game, and I seen that they weren't really doing too well, and Mike Mulvey was there, and Buddy Farrow, again, a good mate of mine, is a top manager, player agent here in Australia. I said to him, mate, have a word to him and see if he wants an old boy to come in and maybe, you know, shake up things. And but that was purely my ego, and obviously Mike Mulvey see me on the couch and said, look, no chance. But it would have been great. I mean, it would have been fantastic for me to be involved and obviously give a little back to some of these kids that are coming through, but I'm glad he didn't.
Fair enough. Did you nearly go anywhere else, or was it that was the only time that you were nearly not just a Victory player in the A-League?
No, look, I did have an opportunity to go to Wellington. It kind of slowed down a little bit. You know, when you think about it, like, I was been at Melbourne Victory for so long, and you don't want to just go and look like that type of player that you're going and you're only going for the money.
Yep.
For me, the reason I wanted to go was because I still wanted to play the game that I love, and I still felt like I could give a little bit, knowing that Melbourne Victory didn't want me. But again, I didn't want to tarnish what I had worked hard for at Melbourne Victory. So that was probably the reason behind staying and not going anywhere. But again, who knows? It might have been different stories. I could have been a Wellington player, which would have been fantastic. But
yeah. Hey, salary cap as well. Just, I want to make a point about the salary cap. I can't quite work out why there's even a debate. Why don't you just rip out the salary cap, have a floor, and have the union, the PFA, make sure that players are getting paid a basic minimum wage and scale it up in terms of experience, or, you know, you have your scholarship players and your first year players and all of that. But there's a minimum wage for that. And then just free up the market, make it a free market. And then you can have transfers in between A-League clubs, and it creates a football economy that way. Am I missing something? I'm no economist, Archie. I know you're not really an economist either, but am I missing something here? Is the cap, like, just got warts and hairs on it and you just got to put it in the bin?
Yeah, look, I think so. It's served its course for getting the league started, make it an even playing field, but you can see that it hasn't worked because it's not at all. And I feel like you should go back to the old model of the old NFL. I mean, I know with contracts these days, I can only speak for myself, is that, and probably a lot of others, is that it's more just here's your set wage, and that's it. There's no incentives, no win bonuses, lose bonus. No, well, you don't get anything to lose, but draws, a certain amount of points. Like, I think those sort of things have gotten lost in the way that the A-League's contracts are probably these days. I know with the old NFL, there's a lot of incentives, and that's what made it so much more competitive out on the field, because you obviously wanted that a bit of extra money. But as far as you're talking about, Adam, I have to totally agree. I mean, it certainly hasn't. It's not working at the moment. Like you said, I'm pretty much for what you said. It needs to be sorted. Mm. It needs to be scrapped. I know we've been talking about it for a while, but again, these are the times and opportunities we need to take to implement these things.
Yeah, because I've talked to a few clubs, and a few of them have said to me, look, if the cap goes tomorrow, it's not going to change how much we're going to pay our players. It's just, but for some of the clubs, it will. But if you introduce the salary cap, the transfer system, for instance, Adelaide United, all these kids are on 3-4 year deals. So if they're going to go to jump over to a Melbourne Victory, they're going to have to pay a transfer fee. So Adelaide United win out of it. The kid wins out of it because he upgrades his salary. And Melbourne Victory get what they want. I can't see where there's a downside.
No, mate, you've nailed it on the head. It's actually perfect. Can we sign that off, mate?
Can you
write that down somewhere?
I'm going to go and work for Bloomberg after this.
Maybe use that big tomato thing. Isn't that a pen?
That's part of someone's contract in the Central Coast Mariners, actually. Everyone gets one of these. It's written in every deal.
But it seems like it. It seems like it.
No, I'm going to go off and work for a financial television station after all that. But no, I know that it's more nuanced than that, and there's probably more detail in it, outside looking in. But to me, it's just a bit of a no-brainer. Anyway, don't know if you saw this morning, as we sit here right now, Arch, this morning or overnight Australian time, there was that crazy game where it's worth £135 million to the winner, being in the Premier League or staying in the Championship. It was Brentford, Fulham, went to extra time, 0-0. Fulham score 2 goals. Brentford score another one, but they hold on. Fulham get promoted again. Brentford, get this, they're 0-8 in playoffs. They've never got out of the playoffs in whatever division they've been in their history. It's just a cruel, cruel way to end a season where they were flying along, they were pushing Leeds and West Brom all the way, just missed out. I can't imagine how those fans and players and coaches and everyone involved in the club would feel.
Yeah, look, mate, hard. It's hard. And that's, unfortunately, things that happen in sport. I mean, you can be flying all year and then all of a sudden you get the opportunity and then those old demons of, being there previously and not making it through. I mean, 0-8. It certainly would play on your mind. And, I've been in positions like that where it certainly would hurt. I mean, I can think of when we lost the final to Sydney and I came off with a knee injury 10 minutes in and then, we got back to 1-1 and then we lose it in penalty shootout. And then it's a hard pill to swallow. I mean,
was that the night Muskie hit the post, the penalty shootout at the grand final? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's the one we lost, and it sits in your mind for a long time afterwards. I mean, I know that the boys had to travel to Japan straight after for an Asian Champions League, so they're on a plane already thinking about, they've got to obviously think about an important Champions League game, but then how do you forget a moment when you've lost the grand final after having such a fantastic season? And, I mean, that's got to be what happens with Brentford. I mean, before that match, it's such an iconic match. I mean, we've been fortunate enough to have so many Australians be part of those games. I mean, when Moy had to take a penalty, I believe, to get, I think it was, who was it?
Huddersfield.
Brighton at the, well, Huddersfield.
Yep.
Huddersfield to get through to the Premier League. They're spectacular games, and to even say that you're a part of it, even though that you lose, is, you've got to take it as it is, and unfortunately that's the way that sport is. But we have Fulham back, which, they're a proud club, and they've been missing from the Premier League for a while. So let's hope that Brentford could, turn their fortunes around and at least get to the Premier League next year.
One day. It would have been good to see someone different. So that's the lowest you ever felt on a football, thanks to a football match, the lowest you ever felt?
Yeah, it was, because there was obviously so much more behind it. Losing a grand final to, the Sky Blues. I mean, just losing a match for them always hurts, but to a grand final hurts even more. And then obviously to do my knee, and that was a World Cup year too. So, not only missing a grand final, but then obviously missing an opportunity to possibly go to a World Cup, which made it even worse. But again, that's just what happens in life. You can't plan for these sort of things; they just happen. It's just how you deal with them. I mean, I was in probably a dark place for a long period after that, but you live and learn, and you grow from
it. How long did it take you to kind of? Because they got on a plane, got to play a match 3 days later. You're sitting back there in Melbourne waiting for your knee to heal enough so you can get surgery, and then you're looking at, 8 months out?
It was difficult. Again, it's just having the right people around you. And for a long period for that, I was shut off to the world. And it was 2-3 days before I was on the table having surgery. And then, obviously, for those 8 months, 9 months, you're thinking about whether you're going to come back the same player. Obviously, too, having that. I didn't even watch that World Cup that year. If you told me, I don't even remember any of those games. I don't even know who Socceroos played in that.
It's probably good you missed the Germany game. We got absolutely pumped.
Well, yeah, I'm glad I did do my knee for that one. So I guess that's a bright thing on it. But that's the sort of things you go through when you're a sportsman, is that it's not all glitz and glamour. You've got to go through the dark times, and that was certainly a period.
Oh, yeah, and unfortunately, you missed out in the World Cup because you missed out on building some of those stories, like the one you told last week after the Japan match, Kaiserslautern. Did you get any feedback from, say, Lord Timothy Cahill or Luke Wiltshire, who were involved in that evening?
No, look, Wilco obviously laughed about it via text, because it was a funny moment. Obviously, Timmy has to play more of a straight bat these days, straighty 180, Timmy. But look, it certainly does bring up a lot of other stories. I mean, for instance, just some of the boys watching that text me or even commented on my Insta and said, what about that time in Korea? So, Adam, I'll lead into that story, is that, we're in Korea, Asian Champions League match, and, you'd like to sort of pass a bit of time. So we decided to go for a little walk of an evening, me, Nathan Coe, Costa Bavaroussis and Rashid Mahazi. And for me, I have to know where toilets are. That's a given. Yeah. In Melbourne, I can tell you every single public toilet, just to have that security of this.
Just to describe it, though, this is true, because when Archie works with us on Fox Sports, like, he'll be sitting there 10 minutes before we go on air, got to go to the toilet. Okay, cool. Yeah, get all the packs off and everything like that, the microphones, and then goes to the toilet, comes out, sits down on the couch. Shit, got to go to the toilet 2 minutes before we're on air. Has to go and do it again. You're a nervous one. That's how you release your tension.
It is. And, being in a situation, you get put in a situation where you're live and there's no way out. So immediately you start thinking, oh, my God, I'm thinking like I'm going to go to the toilet. So that's why, hence why I go so much. But this time we were out and we're walking in Korea, and it was quite dark, but there was a toilet. And, I had my pants up and I had my socks right up. And I said to the boys, look, I need to go. And it looked a bit shady, but, when I need to go, I don't care where it is, I have to. So I end up going, and then I come out, and the boys were like, Arch, why are you wearing one sock? And I'm like, well, mate, I'm sorry, but we're in Korea and there's no toilet paper. So... You got to use what you got to use. So I guess if the moral of the story is, if you're going to travel to Korea, wear two pairs of socks. So
or take some tissues next time.
Well, yeah. Unfortunately, I didn't have had tissues with
the
me.
The little pocket ones.
Yeah, actually, I probably should think that, but for the life of me, I don't even know why I still kept the sock on. But I could have.
Got rid of them both.
I should have just got rid of them both. But I just thought it would have been funny if the boys seen me come out and at least ask that question. But that's some of the stories and fun times that I actually miss more than the actual football. It's the story. So if any of the boys are watching and they can remember a story that they want me to say, obviously time slot people, time slot, then, I'll be willing to obviously tell them. But that was a real funny one.
Better still, if they're watching, DM me and I can surprise him live.
Oh, okay.
And go,
Archie,
remember the time when. So anyone out there, Instagram, AdamPeacock3, just DM me before next week, middle of next week, and I'll try and hit Archie between the eyes with something that he perhaps maybe shouldn't have done or is glad he did. It sounds like a bit of both there in Korea and that Champions League trip. But
If you're gonna cop a lot.
I'll filter them.
Mate, please filter them. Please filter them.
I'll filter them. But I might learn a hell of a lot more about you, Archie Thompson. That's a good thing.
Yeah. I don't know if that's a good thing, brother. I really don't.
What's on the radar for the next couple of days? Are you getting out and going for a quick walk, getting some fresh air? Please tell me yes.
Yes, I am, mate. Well, obviously it's hard too, because there's so much football, you want to stay in, you don't want to miss anything. It's exciting. I mean, there's a massive game for Adelaide tonight, because if they win, pretty much puts Western Sydney's hopes of making the six. And then, you know, there's other games that are in the next few days that will obviously have an impact on where clubs finish, even up the top or even in the six. So, mate, as much as I want to be outside, it's great just that there's A-League football that you can... because there's so much behind each match. So it's really exciting in a time which is a bit dour here in Melbourne.
Arch, stay safe, mate. Stay well. And we'll catch you next week for another chat. Cheers, mate.
Okay, cheers, Azzy. Thanks, mate.
And thanks for watching and listening. Watching on KO Sports and listening on Fox Football's podcast, and wherever you may be listening or watching around the world. If you're in Korea especially, if you see an old sock around, please just don't touch it.